You're listening to The Cultural Hall with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Ella! Samuel! Give us land to live righteously!
That's right, it's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. That's me, Richie T.
And Ashley Garvey Smith.
And it's episode 44. In the second and third block, we'll be talking to the folks of Clean Flicks.
No, we're not talking to the folks of Clean Flicks.
No, we're talking about the folks of Clean
Flicks.
Right,
that's what we're doing.
That's probably more accurate.
Yeah.
But we are talking to the folks of Clean Flicks, the movie. That's why I feel justified in saying that.
Oh, sure, okay, okay. But not actual Clean Flicks guys.
No, wouldn't that be cool?
That would be cool.
And kind of a different story than what we'll hear about here in the second
right. And
third block. So make sure you keep it podding, casting. What would you call it? Keep it listening.
Sure.
That you stay tuned, because it's not stay tuned. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, we're not on the radio,
right?
Technically.
Well, we are.
We are in Cedar Hills and
Cedar City.
Yeah. Well, I live in Cedar Hills.
Cedar Hills is where you live.
Yeah. Cedar City and St. George.
I'd like a retake on this, but I'm not going to take it.
I know.
I'm not going to take it.
Sorry.
St. George, Cedar City, on the air. Thank you.
Yes.
To The Storm and also to Power 91 for broadcasting this.
Nice.
You can find us online, theculturalhall.com. Say that you're just coming in right now and you don't even know what we talked about for the last minute and a half, which would also be me, but you can go to theculturalhall.com and download it. And make a comment on this episode, won't you, please?
Please do.
How was your weekend? Good?
It was really good. Yours was very busy, though,
I hear. Yeah, big weekend.
What happened?
Well,
tell me.
Let me tell you. This last weekend, a friend of mine and I, we put together a comedy festival. It's called the Salt Lake Comedy Festival.
This is second annual?
Second time we've done it.
Nice.
And hoping that there will be a third.
Okay.
So that was fun. It's improv and stand-up comedy and bunch of classes going on, and it's at the Grand Theater in downtown Salt Lake. We also added a film portion of it this year.
All right.
Which was successful.
People could submit their comedy films to you? Okay.
Yeah.
How long were the films in
5 minutes or less.
Really?
And we'll be changing that up for next year and have some other ideas for people as well.
We think
we're going to do a parody movie trailer competition. So people can pick their favorite movie trailers and make parodies of them.
Oh, sure.
And submit them as part of the festival.
Nice. Now, here's a question for you, because you are LDS.
Sure.
Do you screen the people that are...
No.
Nope. Is there any censoring at all?
No.
Okay. So people can...
So people can go, for the most part, obviously, because the comedians and improvisers and everyone like that attended the festival knew that it was going to be in Salt Lake and knew what, you know, the majority of their audience would be.
Okay.
There was, you know, I'm sure there was some sensitivity to that on their ends, but no.
Okay, awesome.
They could do whatever they want, because I find for myself personally, if I start to be stifled creatively, that then it's like, all right, well,
right.
I guess I wanted to not say everything I wanted to say.
Sure.
And that's part of the reason why we don't edit these at all.
Yeah, part of the reason.
Yeah, part. The other part is
because
you're
lazy.
And I'm lazy.
Well, nice.
So, that was this weekend for me. And then Sunday I taught Elders Quorum.
Oh, you did? What was your lesson on?
My lesson was on receiving inspiration. It was Richard G. Scott's talk from the Saturday afternoon session from
this
last general conference.
Fast Sunday. Do you teach every Fast Sunday?
No, I'm typically the second Sunday guy.
Okay.
But last month, May, I missed my second Sunday.
Okay.
So I said, hey, I feel bad. And he said, I don't feel bad. You'll teach first and second Sunday next month. So I said, all right.
So you did it on the Richard G. Scott talk.
It was cool. It was interesting. Within that talk, it talks about abstaining from loud laughter. And...
did you feel like a hypocrite?
Well, no. I said, we read the paragraph from the talk and I said, I cannot comment on this. Would anyone else like to?
Right. Well, good. Okay. At least you weren't hypocritical about
it. No, I got up there and preached, you know, loud laughter is a terrible thing and
what does
I
that
never
really mean?
Do it.
Can we talk
and
about?
And that's what we talked about.
Okay.
What does it really mean?
I honestly don't know, because I laugh very loudly too.
Right.
And my husband, he's a loud laugher.
I can hear him laughing right now.
Yeah. He's
that's how
loud
he is. And he's not even in this city. Where does he work?
He works in Sandy, Utah.
Yeah, so he's miles away.
Yes.
And I can hear him literally laughing right
now.
So
what does it mean?
So what we took it to mean is like any time that, there are two parts of it. We took it as any time that you're laughing at like inappropriate things, not necessarily dirty things.
So you can laugh at dirty things and that's not loud laughter?
No, not necessarily dirty. Not only dirty things, I should say.
Okay.
So things like
laughing at someone's expense.
Yeah. right? Or which someone's misfortune or something like that. I do not pick the face. Or the other part of it was like in a time, you know how sometimes there's always that guy who like there's a spiritual moment. And then there's the guy that's like, buck-a-doo, buck-a-doo, and he's making funny jokes. And,
sure.
You know,
is that you? Are you that guy?
No, I'm not that guy.
You really aren't that guy?
I take a tremendous amount of pride for not being that guy.
Oh, good job.
And then I get in trouble for being proud. So there's that.
Oh,
but,
well, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of how we determined it to be.
I like that interpretation.
But it was interesting, and I think it's different for everyone. So by no means am I saying everyone who's ready to blog to me and
right.
say, what am I with you?
Is that what they're going to say?
Yeah, when exactly. They I don't know where those buttons are.
Yeah, I don't either. I've never heard of those vowels.
Yeah, they're right next. It's a different kind of keyboard.
Yeah.
So everyone that was going to do that, it's just what we came up with in our class. But I would be interested and curious to find out what other people think that means or if they have sources to cite on those things. I always think that kind of stuff is interesting.
Yep.
And you know, speaking of which, feedback, did you want to talk about anything about with your weekend?
No, I just went to some concerts, had some gigs, nothing big.
Nothing?
Just spent it with my family.
Aw.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Yes.
By the way, you got one in the family. I know we haven't really talked about this. Is there another Garby Smith on the way ever?
Hopefully, eventually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Not at this
you're like,
moment in time.
I'm not sharing. No. I don't have anything that I'm not sharing with you.
No. Not right
but
now.
But you would like another
Absolutely.
One. How old's the one? How's the little Garby Smith?
He will be 4 in October.
You got to do it pretty quick. Otherwise, it gets
awkward. I know. Exactly. He really needs a sibling, actually. Yeah. We would like to give him a sibling.
Yeah, so that he doesn't annoy the crap out of you all
exactly.
the time. Exactly. Go play with your brother.
Yep.
Go play with your sister. Leave yeah.
And he's getting that like only child syndrome too.
Yeah.
He's getting a little bit spoiled and selfish. So he needs a sibling.
Yeah.
Bad.
Or a puppy.
No puppies.
No puppies?
Nope. I don't want the responsibility. A 3-year-old is too much.
Kids are cool, but no puppies.
Mm-mm. Not now.
Kid, we'll do that. You bet. But not a puppy.
Mm-mm. No. We don't have a yard to put a dog in.
Oh.
So that's why.
But you do have a house to put a baby in. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm not an indoor pet person.
Really?
Yeah.
Just stick it outside.
Sure.
Just because they have fur doesn't mean they're meant to live outside.
I know, I realize that. That's why I don't have one.
Okay. That's very responsible
of
you.
Yeah, it is. I know.
You know, speaking of people's feedback and, you know, hearing back from people within the hall, which
right,
is what I'm liking to call it now.
I like it.
A couple weeks ago on Articles of News, we talked about the Word of Wisdom and we talked about obesity within the Word of Wisdom. And a lot of people have addressed it online, but we haven't really addressed it within any of the podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to share a couple of people's posts that they left by going to theculturalhall.com and then clicking on the Articles of News. This is Articles of News, I think, for the week of the 21st is where these comments were left. And I'll share just a couple of these, and then we'll get into the episode talking about the clean flicks, folks.
Right.
All right, it says, first of all, this is Amy. She says, I want to start off by saying that I love the podcast. I live in Canada and have been listening from the beginning. Lifer, I find the topics very interesting and love the insight into Utah Mormon culture and how it compares to what I experience out here in the, quote, field.
Mm-hmm.
You asked us to weigh in whether or not an obese person should hold a temple recommend, and so I am weighing in. Obesity right now is defined as having a BMI, or body mass index, greater than 30. BMI is a measure of body fat based on your height and weight. There is some controversy surrounding this method of determining obesity because it does not take into account muscle mass and other factors that affect weight, i.e. bone density, breast size, etc. It also places way more people in this obese range than might otherwise be considered obese. Obesity is considered is something completely different from smoking. Well, it can be argued, and that was the other part of the argument
right.
that we made, is that within the Word of Wisdom, people who smoke can't enter the temple, but people who are obese can.
Right.
It says, well, it can be argued they are both something we do to ourselves that destroy our health and that both are an addiction. There is more to be said about their differences. Number one, people have to eat to live. No one has to smoke to live.
That's right.
Number two, there is a definite bias towards the very skinny in our Western culture today. The fact is, healthy bodies come in different shapes and sizes. Not all who are thin are healthy, and not all who are large are unhealthy. It used to be, even in Utah, that a larger, more substantial woman was considered to be more desirable. Today, the thinner, the better. As far as I am aware, no prophet has yet said anything that being fat is a sin. People are heavy for many reasons, not all of which are due to diet alone. I could go on, but it bothers me that in the church there seems to be a general underlying agreement that those who are large must be sinners and need to be corrected. They often are not. They often are, and not kindly either. People should take into consideration that those who struggle with weight wear it for all to see every day. They know they're fat. They look in the mirror every morning just like you. Their struggles are visibly obvious to the world, and our culture is cruelly unkind to them on a basis. There are many things in society that affect the weight that you are, including education, socioeconomic status, cultural heritage, etc. If the church were to make a certain number on the scale or on a measuring tape, a temple recommend requirement, they would be passing a judgment on all those factors. Obesity is a different kettle of fish than smoking. All of us struggle with something. For some of our brothers and sisters, it is weight. I just don't see size being tied to worthiness before the Lord.
I like it.
So kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then someone else comments on that post. A to the men.
Well, there we go.
Another one weighs in. The major issue with comparing obesity to smoking is that one is a state of being and one is an action. Those aren't comparable. A better comparison to obesity would be cancer. Studies have proven that smoking promotes all kinds of diseases, cancer being one. However, nobody in their right mind would prohibit somebody with cancer from holding a temple recommend. That is because somebody could have gotten that cancer any number of ways, many having nothing to do with smoking, or perhaps they did smoke, but they quit. Does that still make them unworthy of temple blessings? The fact of the matter is that there are so many factors which may contribute to obesity that it's impossible to pin them down on word of wisdom factors. As you can tell from my profile, I'm a big fat guy. I know that I eat healthier than 90% of my thin friends who mostly put no effort into their health. That's not to say that I have a defeatist attitude. I know there are improvements that I can make that will help me be healthier. But what I am saying, though, is that weight is a poor indicator of obedience to the word of wisdom. That's just one other person weighing in. And then let me share one more with you right here. Again, this is at theculturalhall.com. This is episode for the Articles of News, May 21st. And this is from your mom, maybe.
My mom?
No, it just says your mom.
Oh,
dot,
maybe.
Dot, dot. Maybe.
Maybe. All right. Maybe.
Says, I agree with Amy and G-Dub 100%, especially in regards to likening obesity to smoking. Two completely different things. That being said, I'm going to play devil's advocate, no pun intended,
sure,
for a moment. While the bishop and stake president do act as judges during temple recommend interviews, most will recall the questions themselves are very introspective. You are the one answering based on your assessment of your spirituality, worthiness, adherence to the commandments, etc. Ultimately, it comes down to if you feel as if you're keeping the word of wisdom through abstinence, coffee, alcohol, tobacco, etc., and adherence, herbs, fruits, grains, etc. This does not only relate to obese people, though. I'm a practicing physician in Utah and often see people addicted, yes, addicted, to substances otherwise deemed relatively harmless by the general public. Things like soda,
French fries,
processed and or convenient foods. Yeah, that's right, Hot Pockets. I'm looking at you. Energy drinks, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
The consumption of these foods in the past has not had bearing on one's adherence to the word of wisdom and did not necessarily deny one's temple worthiness. But with recent research and modern laboratory and diagnostic techniques, we've come to realize the devastating effects some of these ingredients are having on people, including causing bona fide addictions in people. The word of wisdom doesn't come right out and say that cocaine is bad, but it's generally agreed that because, in part of the addictive nature of cocaine, that it falls within the abstinence portion of the word of wisdom. Therefore, those people who have to have their 64-ounce Diet Coke in the morning to be able to wake up and function, are they in fact keeping the word of wisdom?
Hmm.
Maybe I'm leaning closer to no. Goes on. Why? Well, I always come back to verse 4 in D&C 89. It's often skipped right over, even though it is the actual first verse of the Revelation, because verses 1 through 3 of the Word of Wisdom are just kind of an intro. It states, "Behold, verily, thus saith the Lord unto you, in consequence of evils and designs which do and will exist in the hearts of conspiring men in the last days, I have warned you and forewarn you by giving unto you this Word of Wisdom by revelation." What did the Lord mean by evil designs in the hearts of conspiring men? Perhaps it was the bad guys in Joseph Smith's time that tried to force him to drink alcohol or harmful substances, but I kind of doubt it. If there's one thing I appreciate about the scriptures, that there's no expiration date to the applicability, meaning that there are conspiring men out there with evil designs in relation to the word of wisdom. My personal belief, the writer, not mine, Richie, right, is that that this is in reference to the substances that I've discussed above. Well, with that said, the answer to that temple worthiness question is a personal one, one that, in my opinion, needs a lot more introspective thought and prayer. This is an age of raising the bar, right? Well, coffee, tobacco, alcohol, for the most part, are not too tempting for the temple worthy. However, the daily Coke, your lunch at McDonald's, your TV dinner for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, certainly something to think about.
Yeah, interesting.
So if you'd like to weigh in, you can go ahead and weigh in on this episode or weigh in back on that article.
No
news
pun
from
intended.
May 21st.
Huh? Weigh in.
Huh?
Mm.
I was going to let that kind of just slide. But,
yeah, but no.
You called me right out
I
on
did.
It.
Yep.
Yeah, weigh in. Love to hear you. Love to hear what you think about that. It's theculturalhall.com. There's also always discussions about this and other topics by following us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com and search The Cultural Hall. Like us, and then you can get in on that. And follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. Coming back in the second and third block, we're going to be visiting with the folks that made the movie Clean Flicks.
There we go.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
All right, it is the second block of the Cultural Hall, and here joining us in the Cultural Hall, well, it's Josh, and I'm pulling up his last name, Ligieri.
Is that right?
Well done.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Most people don't, I would imagine.
No, it's Ligieri, Ligieri. There's all kinds of interesting spellings and pronunciations. So
you think, okay, Richie, it's the podcast. You should know who it is that you have
right
on. And I know more of the subject matter, really, than I know Josh himself. Mm-hmm. He sent us this this email, essentially, this message on our Facebook page. You can go to facebook.com, search The Cultural Hall. Like us, won't you please? And you can get in contact with us that way or go to theculturalhall.com. But I'll just read the email that he says. He says, hey, I'm a frequent listener and recommender of your podcast. Thank you for doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks.
How many people would you say are directly responsible?
Oh, at least two or three.
Okay.
So that's...
Hey.
It
only takes one.
Right. Yeah. And I was recommended by Kirby Hayborn to check it out because he was on. So
yep.
And John DeLynn. So checked out both those. And I recommended Michael B. to come on. So.
Cool. You know, and in a few years, you'll have this lineage of people that you wouldn't believe.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so thank you for doing that. He says, I was wondering if you'd consider me as a guest. Obviously, you know the outcome of this.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
He says, my documentary film, Clean Flicks, about the Utah-based movie Sanitizers, debuted this week on iTunes, Amazon, and is on demand in tens of millions of homes in the United States and Canada. DVD and Netflix later this month. Now it is, right?
Yep.
I'm assuming it now
absolutely
is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Let's see. Now to hit what we think is our target demographic. LDS Saints interested in deep discussion and dissection of our culture. He says the film features the well-known battle between Clean Flicks and Hollywood and the lesser-known battle about a Mormon Clean Flicks dealer and his inner demons.
Absolutely.
A large portion of the film is an exploration of LDS attitudes toward film and sexuality. The film is not yet rated, but would likely be rated R due to the necessary scene-to-scene comparisons to show what Clean Flicks cut out. The cool thing is that we created a clean version of the Clean Flicks documentary for the DVD. It also features a deleted scene of one Todd C. Noker, who's a good friend of mine.
But yeah.
By the way, way to include that.
Yeah. I was specifically targeting that toward you.
Right.
He says, the film was directed by one active member of the church, that's yourself, and one ex-member of the church, who's your partner, who's not here. So there's always plenty of good discussion. He says, the film was kind of a big deal when it premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival, one of the top three festivals in the world. Like I didn't know that.
Well, you never know.
That's fine. And we traveled around the country for a year with the film, talking to big groups of people about Mormons in a context totally different from our mission experiences. And then he says, any interest in featuring us or the film around the time of our DVD release, any help you could give would be appreciated. So here we are. Let's get into it.
Thank you for your help, first of all. Thanks for having me.
No, it's glad to have you here. Yeah. I see your CTR ring.
Yeah, gleaming in the light. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's get to know you just a little bit about you. You said when you first came in, you went to BYU Hawaii.
I'm a product of BYU Hawaii. Okay. My father's from Fiji. My mom's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl from Idaho. Oh. And so
looks like you got a lot of her genes.
Yeah,
too.
And so you know, I'm like the poster child for don't let your kids go to BYU Hawaii. So this is the possible potential outcome. So watch out, parents. But
so how did that happen? So mom.
So she was working at the Polynesian Cultural Center. He was a dancer and firewalker, and you know.
Cool.
Yeah, he was easy to woo the ladies. So yeah, I came out of that situation. So yeah, it was a good time.
He was one of the shirtless guys. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Shirtless, fire.
Flexing the ladies, goosing them, and yeah, good stuff.
Good for your mom.
Yeah.
And then where did you go to school?
I grew up all over the West in Hawaii, San Diego, Idaho, and then eventually landed in Utah. I went to Timpview High School in Provo, went on a mission to the Netherlands.
Uh-huh. I bet that was kind of fun. You look like a Netherlandish person.
You know, it's funny because I'm kind of like a mixie. You know, I'm a plaid, as my friends used to say. So
he's ethnic. I'm not really sure.
I was in
ethnic.
San Diego. Everyone thought I was Mexican. At least when I came to Utah, people had heard the term Polynesian.
Right. Yeah.
So, but they all assumed I was Tongan or Samoan or something. And then when I was on my mission and in Europe, I've been working in Europe a lot. Everyone thought I was Middle Eastern. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I can kind of pass for anything. It's too bad I'm not an actor.
I was going to say you should be. Actor,
yeah, it would be
really
perfect.
Good.
Yeah,
especially here in Utah, they're like, we need someone of color.
Yeah, he's a Lamanite.
Asian.
Don't think I haven't played a Lamanite in my time. You know, when I was in high school, I was in a few of those Zara Hemla videos.
Really?
Yeah, I was a Lamanite, so I've done my time.
Yeah,
and then college, then so mission.
Yeah, and I went to the U,
University of Utah,
and studied with Trent Harris when he was there. Mm-hmm. And
Trent
then,
Harris, for people who don't know,
he's a world famous filmmaker, but he's kind of an outsider artist. He has these really strange independent films, and it was a big hit at Sundance and stuff. But
yeah, he did one particular film. I was actually in one of his films.
Really?
Yeah, I was in Delightful Water Universe.
Okay, yeah.
If you see that movie, I think you can see it actually even online.
Uh-huh.
One of the guys I work with is the male lead in it.
And right, Bill, right?
Yeah, Bill.
Yeah.
And then I play Bigfoot.
That's great. I didn't know that.
So you can't actually tell it's me. And all you see is me is about like 10 seconds, and you hear a...
You make a Chewbacca sound. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Exactly.
That is a strange film from what I remember.
Yes. It is all over the place, but fun to play Bigfoot for a minute.
Sure. Oh,
that's your role of a lifetime.
Or as we like to call him here in the Cultural Hall, Kane.
Very good.
So what made you want to do this then? This film in particular? And what is it called? What is it?
It's called Clean Flicks.
Mm-hmm. Just like the name of the business.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was making another film when I was in college down at Utah Valley University.
Okay.
Called This Divided State, and it was about the controversial Michael Moore, Sean Hannity dust up in 2004. And we were filming that, and Clean Flicks kind of came up because one of the opposers of Michael Moore would only watch Fahrenheit 9/11 if you watched the Clean Flicks version.
Okay, we should stop here because I think we're assuming that a lot of people understand what Clean Flicks version is.
Okay.
So tell us what that
is. So Clean Flicks was a company mostly Utah-based that would take Hollywood movies and clean them up, take out the sex, the violence, the nudity, the swear words, and market them. And it really was born out of the Varsity Theater. If people who went to BYU might know, that was been showing airline versions of Hollywood movies for a long time.
So you could actually go to the theater, in case people didn't catch that, you could actually go to the theater.
Yeah.
In the theater, see it on a big screen, but you're watching, you know, an edited airline video.
Exactly. Right. And they got shut down because they were doing their own edits when an airline version wasn't available. And it was around the time of Schindler's List when they edited that film and a few others around that time period that the Varsity got shut down for the first time. And right around that time is when Clean Flicks popped up. And it was Titanic was a big popular hit because
there's that one scene,
mm-hmm. right? And that's what the Clean Flicks customers, you know, or the things that bother them is that one little scene.
Right.
So it was a popular business, and Matrix was the film that really launched them nationally. And they got a lot of momentum through the South and the Bible Belt. They had 800 outlets around the country. They were online. They were pioneering the kind of Netflix model of sending out DVDs. They started making little Redbox-style kiosks. And
really?
Those are still up in Idaho Falls.
So did they have any of those in Utah? Because I don't remember.
No,
them.
I never saw any of those.
Okay. But, so they had kiosks up.
Yeah. So
Idaho.
they were expanding when they were shut down by the Directors Guild of America. So you have Robert Redford, Steven Spielberg, mm-hmm. Steven Soderbergh, Martin Scorsese.
I've never heard of any of these people.
Biggest
Who
guys in
people?
The business oh. coming after this little mom and pop shop, essentially in Pleasant Grove, Utah.
Right.
You know? So that was interesting. We thought, oh, maybe that's an interesting David and Goliath story we can tell. That's kind of cool. And we can have a peek into the Mormon culture, which a lot of people don't know about or are curious about. But right when we started filming, we found out, oh, guess what? A lot of these stores didn't close down. They're staying open illegally under the radar. So we had a fresh new story to follow.
Hmm.
And we followed all these guys who defied the judge's ruling, essentially, and kept operating their clean movie business. So we thought that was an interesting moral dilemma.
Sure.
You're doing it for supposed moral reasons, but you're knowingly breaking the law doing it.
Sure.
So that was a fun story to follow. Yeah. And then there's some even more twists and turns that I don't know if we want to get into. But
yeah, sure.
We do,
I mean,
actually.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
So I want to go back, though, a little bit.
Yeah.
Where do you personally stand on it?
So I had never watched a clean flicks film before I started working on the movie, actually. And I was raised LDS and active my whole life, but I...
Do you watch rated R movies?
Yeah, but I kind of just grew up watching R-rated movies. I don't know if it was because I was an only child with a single parent
sure.
around, but mm-hmm. I just...
We're watching rated R, and I got to keep an eye on you, so you're yeah. watching rated R.
No, it was more like she had to go to work in college, and I was running around with my friends
okay.
doing stuff.
And
so.
The movies weren't hidden, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
You know, but I also, I grew up watching edited movies that were just edited for television.
Uh-huh.
I had my collection of VHS tapes that dubbed,
oh, yeah.
you know,
sure.
Lost Boys and Ferris Bueller's Day Off television.
All of us over the age of 27
yeah. had no idea that...
See, kids, a VHS tape is...
Yeah. Fast Times at Ridgemont High was a good family film as far as I knew growing yeah. up, so, you know... And so, yeah, I mean, I kind of grew up watching R-rated movies from time to time. I wasn't opposed to the idea of clean flicks. I thought it was interesting, you know, that someone who buys a film, I thought at the time, my predominant feeling was you should be able to do whatever you want with it.
Right.
Now, there
if, you,
are,
if you buy it, it's
yeah.
yours. It's your personal version of it.
Now, copyright law kind of throws a wrench in that, the works of that, and there are a lot of kind of complex legal ideas that make that not possible according to the judge's ruling. But I, you know, I was definitely open to the idea of clean flicks
mm-hmm.
and being LDS. I knew a lot of people that used it, you know,
mm-hmm.
as an artist, I, you know, and as someone who values film as an art form, I personally didn't want to watch
it. Seems pretty contradictory.
Necessarily.
Right.
You know, it wasn't for me, but, you know, but I didn't have necessarily a problem with it. So we thought it would just be an interesting kind of cultural study.
So you kind of breeze over it a little bit, but you
yeah.
talk about these shops that then are still functioning.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing essentially what the court said no. So,
and not under the Clean Flicks name, I'm assuming.
Right. And they had to change their name. The next biggest
not
editor.
Not Dirty Flicks.
Yeah. The next biggest company was called Flicks Club, and they're in Logan. And so they had a lot of, you know, USU film students coming down and editing their movies on the weekends.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they got big immediately. I mean, they were kind of a low number two or three competitor in the Clean Flicks days. But as soon as those companies got wiped out,
sure.
they shot up. And they became the biggest distributor throughout the U.S. and Canada. So they became the kind of the new version of Flicks Club.
So how did they think they were going to get away with it, though? That's the question.
Honestly,
because it seems to me like it's like, you know, especially if you want to be popular, which is what you're going to need in order to make money, that then people are going to say, well, I know there's not Clean Flicks anymore, but there is not Dirty Flicks, and it's these guys here, and they'll send you the same thing.
Right.
They devised a few loopholes. You know, one of them was that they were doing it for educational purposes. So they'd try to send a lot of copies out to schools and prisons and
uh-huh.
say, you know, this is, but that doesn't really work. That's not really how fair use works, but that was kind of their idea behind it.
Uh-huh.
There was also this idea that was even going on in the Clean Flicks days that they were going to buy an original for everyone they edited. So Hollywood's not technically losing any money. We're still buying the Hollywood movie, and then
mm-hmm.
we're just supplying you. And the way that they changed it was we're supplying you with a backup copy that just happens to be, you
mm-hmm.
know. So there were ways they were trying to get around it. But the main way was they were just trying to fly under the radar and make as much money as they could because the market was exploding
right.
at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they were just thinking, let's just go for it and see what we can do.
So what's the difference between, and I don't know if you know anything about this, but Clean Flicks, you know, people who are editing it, and then there was this, I don't know what it's called, but it's a device that
ClearPlay. Now, so the judge ruled that ClearPlay is different because it doesn't make a new copy of the disc. So that's where copyright law is infringed upon, is when you're making a duplicate copy.
Okay.
Whereas where ClearPlay is essentially a glorified remote control.
Right.
It's just pushing mute or fast forward or skip, but it's pre-programmed times to push and skip.
Okay.
So the judge basically said, you're not changing the movie. You're just fast forwarding or muting it for your audience. And so the judge ruled that that was okay.
Oh, it seems like that's kind of splitting hairs though, doesn't
right.
it? Or
it
do does. You, or do you feel like it's two different things?
I mean, it's just copyright law. And I don't know that I necessarily agree with where copyright law falls into place. I would just say, well, we now know it's against the law. And so for these guys to continue doing that, knowing that it's against the law is interesting. Whether or not the law makes any sense, I don't know if I'm qualified to say, but I don't think it necessarily does, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, you can get qualified to say for you.
I mean, I think it seems weird. You know, I mean, I know Ray Lyons, the owner of CleanFlix, makes the argument, you know, if I bought a VW van and I took it to a van conversion shop, I'm allowed to trick it out, do whatever, anything I want with it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the studios aren't allowed to say. Now, the copyright law is, well, you actually don't technically own the movie, which is a weird thing. You mm-hmm. own the right to view it, and you're licensing the right from the studio to view this movie in your home, even though you've bought the physical disc. So mm-hmm. The law says, no, it's not your movie, really. Even if you buy it, it's not yours.
Hmm.
I think that's weird, but, yeah. you know. But there are other arguments. There's the legal argument. There's a theoretical argument. There's an artistic argument. There's
right.
a moral argument. And the filmmakers didn't care about the copyright law. They were arguing for, they didn't want their art torn apart.
Yeah,
the studios
it's
were
essentially
arguing
like
for
taking
copyright.
A big old strip of red paint and yeah. painting it across the Mona Lisa saying, it's our interpretation.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean... That's what was going on at the Varsity Theater too. They were literally just blacking out, you know, pieces of film as they would go through.
So were most of these mom and pop shops that you mentioned, like the one in Logan and these other ones that you guys feature in the film, CleanFlix, which you can check out on iTunes and some other places, we'll tell you again, are most of them Mormon owned?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's not that everyone in the country wouldn't appreciate this. They took a poll, I think it was ABC. They found that about 49% of Americans would want a clean version of the movie if they could have access to mm-hmm. it. But we all know, because of the Mormon stigma against R-rated movies, which comes from President Benson's 1986 address, which most Mormons don't even know what the source for that is.
Sure.
First
right.
of all, no one we interviewed the entire time knew where that even came
you
from.
You didn't interview me.
Yeah, well, we didn't know that you had done your research.
It's a 1986 President Benson talk.
Oh, you are so smart.
Do you know who he was talking to?
He was talking to us, everyone, who would hear his talk.
Well, that's interesting, Rich, because
the world.
It was in priesthood session.
The Lamanites.
It was just in priesthood
and
session.
And he was only addressing the young men at the time.
Huh.
So, I mean, that's an interesting tidbit. Now, you know, being Mormons, we know we like to take things... As far as we can take
them. Oh, really?
So, yeah. You know, I mean, if we're not supposed to drink hot drinks, we should also abstain from Coca-Cola. Okay. That makes sense, right?
If we can hurry this up,
chocolate.
I got my hand cart and we got to go to Missouri. So
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, we've all adopted that culturally. I think that's a pretty cultural norm. But,
right.
You know, but also that's only in the U.S. What if you're, you know, from Europe? There are no such things as R-rated movies.
It's free pass because there's no R-rated movies.
Well, yep. You have to make up your own mind about
what's
appropriate.
Well, you mean the spirit of the law? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
It's letter here in the cultural hall, Josh. Letter of the law. I don't want to have to make any decisions for myself. I want people to just tell me everything that I
have to
do.
And you know, unfortunately, this didn't make it in the movie because the movie ended up being about following these guys who are in business and some of the underhanded deeds they got involved
with.
But you know, we talked to a representative of the church. He's a media representative, so he's not a religious leader, but he expressed some disappointment that some of the students that he was dealing with at BYU on occasion weren't taking it into their own hands to make choices for themselves. They wanted strict rules and they wanted to follow them exactly, and they didn't want to have to think for themselves. And he expressed a lot of disappointment in that. So
well,
I thought that was interesting.
It needn't be commanded in all things, right? Isn't that what they say?
I think that's what they say.
Correct principles.
Yeah, and let them govern themselves.
Yep.
Never heard that either. coming back in the third block, I want to talk about, you mentioned and we alluded to it a couple mm-hmm. times, these kind of underhanded deeds that might be going on. We'll get into that here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
All right, it's the third block of the Culture Hall, and it's Josh LeGarry. Ligari?
I said Ligari.
Ligari.
If you were actually a Fijian, you might say Lingayiti or something, but I don't,
oh, really?
I don't do that, so you don't have to.
And I don't look a single bit Fijian.
No.
So, you know, in the break we were talking about kind of this adopted cultural thing about rated R movies, and we will get here in just a second to some of the undermined dealings of the Clean Flicks folk, but your personal feeling on it? Do you feel like it's something that the church has said don't watch rated R movies?
Gee, you know, I mean, I'm a sinner. I need the Lord just like anybody else. No, I think it's certainly not a commandment. It's a suggestion, and like a lot of the suggestion and counsel that comes from our leaders, you know, it's meant to be taken seriously. There was a recent release from the church office though that clarified doctrine and said that if things have only been said from the pulpit once, they might not necessarily be doctrine. Mm-hmm. This would.
You're like, loophole under this.
Yeah, I'm looking for loopholes like anybody else, Richie. Yeah. What can I tell you?
So taking that, so you watch rated R movies. Are there kinds of rated R movies that you don't?
Yeah, I mean,
that you don't watch?
I choose based on content, you know, and as I alluded to before, if you're in another country, that's what you have to do anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, in Holland, where I serve my mission, there's no R-rated. You know, R rating, but when you open the newspaper, or I don't know if they have newspapers anymore, but when I was on my mission, they did.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see a film listed, it says what's in it, and you can choose based on what's in it if you want to go watch it. And that's the approach I take.
So, what won't you watch?
Honestly, violence bothers me more than nudity. Mm-hmm. Nudity bothers me within specific contexts.
Sure,
you know,
okay.
And I think that's the problem with the Clean Flicks thing is it's decontextualized. So
if they drop like 10 F bombs.
I would prefer not to hear it, and especially
sure.
now that I have kids.
Sure,
right.
I'm seeing
yeah.
the value of Clean Flicks a lot more than I did a couple of years ago when we started making the movie.
Right,
you know, but I don't think that a word is necessarily bad in every context.
Right.
I don't think a naked body is necessarily bad in every context. And mm-hmm. so, you know, if it can be beautiful in a painting and meaningful in a painting, and I see film as an art form, I think it can be the same in film. It just depends on the way it's being used. And I feel like I'm an adult enough to be able to make that decision
sure.
for myself.
Sure.
So,
where do you fall, Ash?
Where do I?
We
try not to watch rated R movies. Mm-hmm. In general at our house, but
what are the ones that get you though? Because there's a huge but right there. But we do watch.
I feel like I'm kind of throwing my husband under the bus because he really doesn't. He's really. I don't want to watch rated R movies, and we don't go and rent out rated R movies.
Mm-hmm.
But if sometimes if they're on TV. Like I just watched Sophie's Choice mm-hmm. on TV. It was
so
unedited.
You watch not good rated R movies.
So, okay, but I've never seen Sophie's Choice. Like, let's just be honest. I've never seen it. So I wanted to see it. So I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if they're on TV,
is there things that you won't watch? Like he mentioned, you know, the violent stuff that gets him, or are you? Like,
I don't really draw a line because then I feel like I'm just kind of justifying and rationalizing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if I want to watch the movie, I'm going to watch the movie. Like I'll be honest, I watched Bridesmaids. It was hilarious and mm-hmm. it's rated R
right.
and I watched it.
Nice.
So yeah.
It's interesting because one of the few things that I draw a really hard line on is rated R movies.
Interesting.
And I just don't watch them.
Yeah.
And I just, right before I went on my mission, I saw, I think it's Clear and Present Danger with Will Smith and
yeah.
And guy who was roommate with that other guy that I can never think. Anyway, and it's odd that you're like, oh, those guys were roommates. Why can't I think someone will let me know? But after that, I was just like, I'm not going to watch rated R movies again. And so it's just been.
That's
but
reasonable.
But it's weird for people who know me and also who, you know, chat with me in certain contexts and stuff like that to be like, what?
I don't think you're a square. Right. So don't worry about that. I think it's fine. You know, I just don't personally think it's you know, people always throw out like Schindler's List or
sure. Yeah.
Saving
yeah,
Private Ryan.
Yeah,
ones,
yeah. You really need to see the movie to be able to understand. Right. Another one was where Jim Caviezel plays Jesus. What's it called?
Passion of the Christ.
Passion of the Christ. People mm-hmm. are like, you need to see it
yeah.
right.
so you can understand. But I'm like, you know what? I don't know that I really
Yeah, and
need
I never
to
saw
see
it.
That.
So
you know, I hate to pull out a Brigham Young quote.
Do it. Pull me.
Sometimes you can find a Brigham Young quote to support anything you want to argue
right?
about.
Yeah, you bet.
But you know, they had built a theater in Salt Lake City
uh-huh.
and people were worried about some of the content of the performances that were going to be going on in this
sure.
theater in Brigham Young.
Live
said,
theater, I'm the, presuming,
yeah,
obviously.
Live theater. No, it was a... No,
movies in Brigham Young
it
time.
It was a IMAX 3D.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, so the point of the theater is to be able to see the darkness in the world and mm-hmm. know what is out there to avoid. And, you know, and I think that's also a reasonable way to look at art. I think art should ask questions. I think art should force us to look at ourselves a little bit. Hmm. I'm getting very highfalutin and snooty, but...
But you know what? Brigham Young only said that once from the pulpit, so I don't know that we can... So let's get into Clean Flicks now, yeah. kind of the dark side of Clean mm-hmm. Flicks.
Now, I will say, we do have a clean edited version for you, Richie. So
yeah?
You need of the documentary, film? So you need to check that out.
Okay.
Okay.
And later on, we'll make sure to give you plenty of time to be able to say this is where people can check it out and everything. Mm-hmm. But so the dark side of Clean Flicks...
Well, this wasn't something we knew was going to happen when we got involved with it. First of all, we found out that these guys weren't keeping that 1-to-1 ratio I talked about. They weren't buying an original copy.
Oh,
they were just saying.
No, we're just saying they were.
Yeah, okay. They would buy one, and they would make 3,000 copies and have them in the back. And we first realized this. We were in the back room of this guy's place in Orem, and there were a stack of probably 300 Beverly Hills Cop 3s.
Mm-hmm. And they were selling them, not just renting them.
They were selling and renting them, yeah.
Okay.
Exactly, both. And I thought, there's no way that he has 300 copies of Beverly Hills Cop 3 in the back of here somewhere. There's not a need to have those movies.
Especially
here.
Beverly Hills Cop 3.
I mean, it was such a random movie that I thought, there's no way that that's the case. And we did our research and we found out, yeah, I mean, they were just dubbing them and making a huge profit. And that's why I think they were trying to stay under the radar and sell as many as they could in the meantime. Now, there were even darker, and not to give away the very ending of the film, but, you know, our main character who we were following for 3 years was, and I don't know if you do know this.
Yes.
He was arrested for solicitation of sex from a minor.
Right.
Inside of his Clean Flicks store with his partner, in the Clean Flicks business.
Right.
Who you are aware of.
Yes.
And there were drugs in the building. There was a keg of beer in the building. There was pornography in the building. There was alluding to pornography being filmed on the location.
Right.
And whether or not all of that's true, I'm not sure, but that's what was in the police report.
Mm-hmm.
And we had hints of this while we were filming the film. We knew he wasn't the good Mormon guy he was pretending to
be. And it was just one. How many total owners were there, or how many people were involved
that
in
were
this business?
Implicated in it.
In the...
just in the Clean Flicks business, how many?
Okay, so initially they were all over the country. There were about 800. Once they reopened, we were only following the ones in Utah, but they were probably about 15 to 20.
Okay.
In Utah and Idaho.
And so this was just this...
This was just one guy's story.
Okay.
It's an isolated incident.
Right.
To leave it out of the film would have been disingenuous.
Oh, absolutely.
Weird, you know?
Well, because now a lot of times when people hear Clean Flicks, they actually...
Think of him.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he was arrested, and we had some hints of this while we were filming. We would go in his office, and there'd be... You know, a Starbucks glass and a Playboy or a box of wine. And maybe
he didn't try and hide it or anything?
Maybe he did try to hide it. But maybe anywhere else in the country, those wouldn't be huge clues
that
this guy's going to molest children.
But
in Utah and in the context of a Clean Flicks store, it starts raising some interesting questions.
Sure.
You know? And so we have these questions. We were asking some of the other dealers in the area, and they're like, well, you know, he's been to prison, really. We've known him for 2 or 3 years. He hadn't ever mentioned that, you know.
Yeah.
And so it started. The mystery kind of started unraveling about what was really going on.
Did you confront him?
No, because it didn't really come to a head until his arrest. And at that point, you know, he went to jail. And,
right, he did.
And we followed his court and that, you know, his court proceedings. That's in the film as well.
Mm-hmm.
We did give him the opportunity to talk about what happened with that specific case with the girls.
And
we
didn't
confront him about, hey, you've been lying to us for 2 years, which, you know, may have been.
Right, but did he talk about it?
You know, he declined.
Did he?
To
okay.
talk about the specifics. In court, he said he was with them for less, which contradicts what the young women said, that they were there for half an
right.
hour.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But the judge, you know, eventually decided that he wasn't involved in paying the girls necessarily, but, he, you know, involved in getting involved with girls that were at a questionable age. And,
sure.
And the judge basically said if they'd been a year younger, that's mandatory life sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So you really lucked out that they were 13 and not 12.
Sure.
You know.
Wow.
And so where did that end up with him?
He went to jail. Mm-hmm. He didn't serve his entire sentence. He served only, I think, 47 days or something like that. Then he was on an ankle monitor for the rest of it. His partner went to jail for much longer, almost a year before he was released on an ankle monitor. And he resides in Utah still, and he's working with the Utah Film Commission, so that's good to see.
Right? So what do you...
Utah Film Commission doesn't like our movie because it portrays Utah in somewhat negative light, but they will hire that guy to work for them.
Right.
So that's interesting.
You know, but it's an interesting thought because so many times you hear about these people who, for lack of a better term, are kind of religious zealots.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Who end up having this kind of
dark side.
This dark side that they're trying to cover up. Do you get that sense that that's what it was with him? He's like, yeah, I'm cleaning up the world. Don't pay attention to what I'm doing behind closed doors.
He was doing a lot of stuff behind closed doors. I think getting to know him a little bit better and getting to know, we talked to his family and girls that he dated. We found out that he had really kind of checked out of the church at a much younger age than he kind of let the rest of us know about it.
Uh-huh. Right.
He continued to wear like a white t-shirt to kind of pass as that he's wearing garments.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. Things like that.
Which happens more than
yes.
I think people realize.
Right. Yeah.
Probably yeah. So.
Trust me, Josh. It does. Not probably. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, he was doing that. I'm sorry, I kind of got lost on the question there.
You're fine. It's just kind of this religious zealotousness where it seems, you know, that these guys kind of cover it up. I don't know that there was necessarily a question.
A lot of people would take exception and say, you know, Daniel, we can't judge, you know, Clean Flex or Mormonism on Daniel because he wasn't really a Mormon.
Right.
I think that's a little bit unfair, though, because he is certainly a product of our culture.
Right.
You know, his sexual perversions, where they went, and we really toned back what we put in the film compared to the things that people
sure.
say.
Sure, right.
I'm not going to get into...
How come? Why the choice to do that?
Part of it is I haven't spoken to him about it specifically.
Uh-huh. So you just wanted to make sure it was factual.
But also, it wasn't necessarily necessary for our story.
Okay.
We were only... giving enough information to comment on the exact case that involves Clean Flix movies and our story. So I don't want to get into his entire
sure.
resume of misdeeds, but let's just say there were a lot that we heard about
right.
that were alleged.
Sure.
And
well, you should hear some of the stuff about Ashley here, boy. Yeah. I could 25 more.
You
minutes.
Don't even want to know.
Okay.
And it may be hearsay, but we don't know.
but you know, the thing is you know, a lot of people told us, a lot of his friends, ex-girlfriends told us, it was really a pressure. And I'm not saying anything negative about the church, but I think in the culture, there's a pressure to conform to a certain way. And if he didn't fit that.
Uh-huh.
And so he was looking for outlets for these, you know, sexual urges
right.
he had. And they took a real dark twist because he didn't have a positive way to discuss those, to express those, to talk about those things. So I really do see him. I see that this culture pushed him in that way. Now, that's not to excuse any of the stuff he did.
Sure.
He's certainly a big boy. He made some really bad decisions.
Right.
And he did some terrible things.
Do you think that the pressure really exists?
I think it totally exists.
Do you address that in the film?
Do you think it exists?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you address it in the film?
I mean, a little bit. You know, Mormon culture is used in the film only enough to understand the context of Clean Flix and Daniel.
Okay.
We don't, other than the President Benson clip, we don't get into doctrine. It's not about the church in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And even though my partner is not a member of the church, he doesn't have hard feelings toward the church.
Right.
He has a great relationship with his family who are all still LDS. So there's absolutely nothing that I would consider anti-Mormon at all in the film, but it asks a lot of questions about our culture, especially in relation to approach sexuality and art.
What do you think outlets are that the church could adopt, or that as a culture we could
yeah.
adopt to be able to? Because I mean, what it's
rough,
like,
right?
Yeah, what it seems like now, and you got a very good point. Is it's like, hey, here's all this stuff and all these people, and this is what's going on, and it's we need an outlet for it.
Yeah,
but so many
healthy outlets.
Yeah, but so many times people go, yeah, here's the problem, and this is what the problem is, and I got the problem, and then you go, yeah, but what's the solution?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, solution. Now that's a whole different thing. But let's go back to the problem.
Maybe the church wasn't for him. I know, and I know that's for everyone. And the way we like to think about it as a universal religion, I don't think the way he was wired did not function well within the culture.
Hmm.
I'm not an anthropologist or a psychologist, so I can't. I don't know. You're right. I don't have an answer for it. But what I do know is that it was the perfect storm of circumstances for him and the way he was raised and where he was raised and how his life came at him, lead him down a really dark path that I don't think the church would ever want to happen to
sure.
anybody. And so I think when we are examining our culture, we can think about even having it not to be shameful for people to be able to talk about transgressions or thoughts that they're feeling. I think there's a fear to admit that you might be different, might be outside what is, you know, the perfect
Sure, right. Sure.
You know, and I understand that because, you know, I didn't ever really do drugs or get into sex or anything like that when I was in high school. But I was dark-skinned.
Sure.
And I had a
You're different.
Single parent and
you're different.
Only child. And yeah. I felt that what it felt like to be different
right.
in the culture, you know.
And how did you deal with it?
I didn't deal with it that great. I didn't.
What did you? I mean, what did you do? What did you do? Positive and negative.
I had a mohawk. I had some piercings. I decided if they're gonna dislike me, I'm gonna be able to control the ways that in which they dislike me.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then I flipped the opposite way around, and I went on a mission, and I cleaned up my life, and I got married in the temple, and
how come? What was the change?
Well, it was not, I never had a negative feelings toward the church.
Uh-huh.
And again, this is I think to be able to have a mature conversation about it, we have to be able to separate the church from the culture.
Sure.
My beliefs, you know, were there. I was always very spiritual, and I attended church even at that time too, but I didn't
mohawk and earrings and all.
I blessed the sacrament with blue hair, sir.
Nice. Yeah.
it wasn't a good experience for everyone in the ward. And then there were some conversations about it afterward, but it happened. It went down. And I could divulge one other thing, but I probably shouldn't do that.
Okay.
But, you know, I had a piercing throughout the course of my mission.
Oh, really?
I talked to my advisor about it in the MTC.
Uh-huh.
He said not to worry about it.
Oh, really?
And he said, don't let this be a stumbling block for other people.
Where was it, if you don't mind me asking?
In my tongue.
Oh, in your tongue. Okay.
And I said,
I was going to say, because it surprises me a lot that they would let you have ears pierced.
No, I had a tongue piercing, and my mom said before I left, she was really upset about it. And I said, you know what? If anyone ever asks me to take it out, I'll take it out. She's like, the prophet already asked you to take it out.
You're like, in 1992.
But except for him.
But no. He only said it one time, Mom, so that's the difference.
I mean, I eventually decided to take it out for myself, and that was, you know, but
how empowering it was for you to take it out on your own volition than having someone tell you to take it out.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Hmm.
So do you think, aside from this one isolated incident, do you think that these guys in Clean Flicks really felt like they were doing good and they were was it more than just making money?
I think there were a lot of people that were in it for what they would call the right reasons. I support them. I think they're good people. There's a guy in our film named Robert Perry. He owned a store up on 800 North in Orem, and he had biggest stores and the majority of stores.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great guy. I believe wholeheartedly he was only doing it for the cause. He's a wonderful human being. A lot of them weren't for the business.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't necessarily bad guys either.
Well, sure. I mean, but we don't want to make money, right?
It was money,
yeah.
You know. I don't think a lot of them were dastardly characters.
Right.
But a few of them were.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know?
And more so than just this one isolated incident, there were other people that were
it depends on, not that far.
Okay.
But I mean, the idea that you're going to say you're doing this for moral reasons, but you're knowingly making dubbed copies. I mean, I know in our current culture, no one cares about illegally downloading a movie or ripping a disc.
Actually, can you hang on one second? I'm downloading something. That'll...
But as someone who is trying to make a living off of movies, and,
sure.
Right.
And it's, I have to say, that's against the law. And, you know, you're no better than me with my pierced tongue and my R-rated movie watching if you're downloading movies, you know. We all
choose who we get a sin.
Yeah, that's exactly. All. And it's, but it is. I think it's illegal. And they were making thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars by dubbing these movies and selling them to good-hearted LDS people who didn't want their children, you know, to watch smutty things, you know.
Sure.
And I think there's a real disconnect there for me in terms of morality.
Hmm. So before we let you go, there's a few things that we ask kind of everyone.
Let's do it.
Do you have a calling right now?
I was released very recently.
I
went up and shot a film in Alaska, and so they had to find a replacement for me. Before that, I was in the primary.
Oh, cool. Doing what?
I was the CTR5 teacher.
Oh,
there you
fun.
Go.
And I did that for about 3 months. Before that, I was in the Elders Quorum presidency for about 2 years.
Nice. Second counselor?
Second counselor.
Yeah,
yeah.
See?
Hey, what? Nice job.
second counselor.
They wanted me for the first counselor, but the stake said no. He's a second counselor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you might be a stake president someday.
Yeah. as far as I consider, I already am. You know, I just don't have the stake yet.
And so.
What was the film?
That's my pedigree.
What was the film that you had in Alaska?
I'm
that you
still
were
working
doing?
On it. It's about these native tribes in the interior of Alaska, and they've got the largest suicide rate in the country. A lot of it is due to alcoholism.
Oh, really?
But also depression, and a lot of that's brought on by globalization, because live in these small communities where they live off the land.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But if for the first generation ever, they have satellites. So they're watching reruns of The Nanny and they're on Facebook. And they see the idealized version of the world that's out there. And then they can contrast that with the third world circumstances they're living in.
Right.
And it's causing a lot of depression. And then the fact that there are a lot of guns and alcohol around isn't the best combination.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
What about if you could pick a calling, what calling would you pick to have? And you could make one up if it's something that you're like, you know, the church should have this and I would be this. What would your calling be?
Anything but word missionary is fine with me.
Really?
How come?
It's just not for me. It's good. I wouldn't mind reactivation efforts. I'm not good at trying to convince people to do what I'm doing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, hard on the mission then?
It wasn't bad in that context, but I was certainly worn out by the time I finished.
Mm-hmm.
Cuz that was something that was hard for me is where I'm like, "Okay, so I'm going to go to someone's house."
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell them that the way that they're living needs to be changed.
Right.
I was terrified the first time. And I was terrified when I found out we're going to tell the Joseph Smith story the first time we go to their house.
Right.
But once I did that and I saw the change it made in that first investigator's house where we shared that story, kind of blew me away and kind of opened my eyes to the way you could help people. And I did a lot of, really in Amsterdam, you don't do a lot of teaching. It was a lot, it was a lot of service.
It was a lot of avoiding.
So I might not be well practiced in missionary work. You know, if they want me to come do the garden, I've done a lot of that. So, but in the Elders Quorum, I love working in the Elders Quorum. I love working with the less active members. I have a testimony of home teaching, if I can share that with
you. Please.
Absolutely.
I think it's one of the most important programs we have, because it's the way to actually affect someone else's life that we have power over.
How
if someone is struggling financially, if they're struggling spiritually, to be able to have firsthand contact with those people, share that with people that can help them that are above us, like the bishop. We got involved in a lot of stuff that I never knew was going on in our ward with marital disputes and people who were destitute that I had no idea.
Right.
Being able to help those people was the most amazing
thing. Was there any of that that helped you as you were growing up? You mentioned your mom, single mom.
No, we were never on the church welfare program, but I
did. Or I just mean even home teaching, because
no, we never had home teachers growing up.
Oh. Really?
And I think,
way to go, guys.
In Provo?
Not even when we came to Provo. I mean, I was all over the country, so it might have been that we were always the new family was going to be there for a couple of years and then move. But,
right.
So that could have been the reason. But we never had home teachers, and it was on my mission that I realized how important that was and how important that network was, and really that the people relied on the missionaries so much, but I realized how much more important it was for them to rely on each other because the missionaries were flopping out every week. And so to be able to have a strong network of people that could actually care for one another's spiritual and temporal needs was extremely important. And so I started to gain a testimony there, and it really solidified when I was in the Elders Quorum presidency.
Cool.
I did not expect to be talking about this.
Right? No, you're fine. You're fine. That's how we do this.
That's what happens when you come to the cultural hall.
What is your favorite thing about your faith?
Oh, geez. I've been obsessed with church history for the last 15 years.
What part?
Because
I'm super nerdy too, but I wonder if we have the same nerdy obsession.
It's grown. I mean, it started out all about Joseph Smith. And so, I think like a lot of people, that's an entry point. It's something we value so much, but we don't know that much about.
Sure.
Right. And so to be able to dig into that, and obviously, of course, Richard Bushman's book was like my entryway gateway.
Best Christmas
gateway
present
drug.
Ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I got into that, and the Joseph Smith papers that are out right now, incredible. I always had an interest in church history because my grandfather, who's on my white side, was from Pioneer stock, and he'd always talk about George Washington Bean, who which is the worst name ever.
Yeah.
But I thought it was hilarious when I was growing up. But he was the interpreter, and he would go out to the different native tribes, and he spoke all the languages. And so Brigham Young would send him and Porter Rockwell out, and my great-great-great-great-grandfather to speak with them in their own tongue and bring gifts and trade and Puerto Rockwell in case there was trouble. So they were mission companions for a long time.
Oh, wow.
So I got into that, my own family history.
On your white side, of course.
Yeah.
I love that reference.
Yeah, exactly. And then the whole, I find the whole polygamy manifesto era really interesting. If you don't know a lot about that, what transpired in that kind of 100 years that we never really talk about.
Yeah, because you got Brigham Young passing away, and then it's like, and President Benson said no rated R movies, and you go, wait a minute, what happened the last 100 years?
Yeah, exactly. So I love that. That's my favorite section right now because there's so much that I don't know about that I can dig into.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is there anything else you want to? Oh, let's have you climb up on the Ramiumptum. Let people know where they can find you, follow you, buy you, sell you, you.
I'm not
on your white
I'm not for sale,
and Fijian
Richie.
Side.
My white side's not for sale. The brown side. Let's see. Go to cleanflixthemovie.com. That's what I'm here to talk about. So.
Is that an X?
Cleanflix with an X. Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Not three of them, all right?
No, not three of them. Although there were marketing considerations, right?
I'm sure.
But no, cleanflixthemovie.com. It's for those of you who watch R-rated movies. It's on Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, Video On Demand. For those of you who wish to abstain, and I support you in that decision, the DVD is available with a clean track. There are bleeps over the swear words and big old fuzzy things all over the place. Really, there's not that much of that in the movie to begin with. It's only there are like three or four scene comparisons that are really important to be able to understand what was going on. But and so check that out there. I'm on Twitter, and you go to my website, IcarusAE.com. My co-director Andrew is Beachfire Pictures is the name of his production company. But really, go to cleanflixthemovie.com. Check that out. That's where your listeners, I think, will be most happy. And then you can find us from there.
Cool.
Great.
We appreciate you taking a minute and being here in the cultural hall with us. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And when the time comes, you will travel home safely.
And if you were not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row
of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back.